Like the office they commemorate, presidential libraries are living institutions. Certainly, it is my hope that the Reagan Library will become a dynamic intellectual forum where scholars interpret the past and policymakers debate the future.
Welcome to a Reagan Forum, hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. The Center for Public Affairs offers lectures and forums presenting perspectives on important public policy issues of the day, from politicians, authors, members of the media, business and military leaders, and more. In this week's Reagan Forum podcast, we go back to our March 11th, 2021 virtual event with Midshipman First Class Sidney Barber. In December of 2020, Sidney Barber was appointed as the Brigade Commander for the United States Naval Academy, the first Black female Brigade Commander at the Academy's history. In an interview with the Capital Gazette about the appointment, Sidney said, "I see it more as a responsibility and a privilege and an honor to be able to be someone to pave the way. I feel extremely blessed that I have this opportunity to open doors for people who are coming after me." The brigade commander, who serves for one semester, is selected by the Academy senior leadership through an application and interview process. The role was previously held by First Class Ryan Chapman, who called Barber a catalyst for action, a visionary, a listener, a doer, and a person driven by compassion, by faith, by a fierce sense of passion and heart full of love. Barber, who is a mechanical engineering major, joined the Reagan Foundation's chief learning officer, Tony Penny, in a conversation about her role. Let's listen.
Hi, everybody. My name is Tony Penny, and I am the Chief Learning Officer at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. And today I am joined by Sidney Barber, who is the first Black female brigade commander at the U.S. Naval Academy in the entire 175-year history of the organization. So, Sidney, thank you so much for joining us today.
Tony, thank you for having me. It's such an honor to be here today.
Yeah, so the first thing I'd love to jump into, I'd just love to learn a little bit more about your role and what does it mean? So to be the brigade commander, what does that job entail?
So as a brigade commander, I am the sole representative of all 4,500 midshipmen in the brigade. So I have a staff of about 30 midshipmen that I speak to on a weekly basis, probably almost every single day with my most immediate staff. And I have an XO, which is someone that I talk to. And it's just kind of like my number two, my go-to person. And so we talk about problems that are going on within the brigade, work through issues, find solutions. And then at the end of the day, I'll present those solutions to the commandant and him and I will discuss and work through some of the challenges that we're seeing right now and try to find the best outcome from the brigade. And then on the flip side, I pass the commandant's intent. So if there's something that he would like to see, something that he's seeing that he would like to be fixed, things that he would like for the brigade to make a priority, then I'll then pass that to the staff too. And then we'll work through how we can carry that out within each company.
Excellent. Yeah. In some of the interviews I've read with you, you make the comparison that it's kind of similar or akin to like a student body president, right? But the process is a little bit different for how you came to be in this role. You weren't necessarily elected by your peers, but you had to go through kind of an application and vetting process, right? What was that process like?
So it's about a 3 or 4 week long process. So it starts down at the company level. So there are 30 companies within the brigade, and it'll be three rounds of interviews, one with your company officer, which is a lieutenant or captain, a lieutenant in the Navy or a captain in the Marine Corps. And they'll go through a series of questions. And then from there, it will narrow down to a battalion level. So there's six battalions within a brigade. And so you'll go through a round of interviews with your battalion officer and the midshipman leadership with the battalion staff. And then you'll get pushed up. There'll be five midshipmen per battalion that will get pushed up for brigade interviews. And from there, you'll sit before a board of six officers that will either be a captain in the Navy or a lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps or a colonel in the Marine Corps, and the deputy commandant, the previous brigade commander, the brigade master chief. And so you'll sit there, you'll walk into a room, they'll ask you, you have 7 minutes to go through your interview. They'll ask you a series of questions. And then from there, they'll rank each midshipman on an objective ranking scale. And they pick ultimately the person that they pick as number one will get brigade commander, number two will be the brigade XO, and so forth for the rest of the staff. So that's the process. It will be in summary, just a three-round interview process, and then a ranking from the senior officers.
So can you take me back to the moment that you decided to put your name forward for this process? What was going through your head? Like, what is it that compelled you to say, hey, you know what? Yes, I want a shot at this role.
Yeah, so I never really pictured myself being in this role when I came in here plebe year. It wasn't something on the forefront of my mind. I always looked up to some of the strong female leaders that I would see when I was in high school. When I came to the academy, I always admired how strong the female leadership was in particular. So had a lot of role models, and it was something that I came upon as someone told me, it was about a year ago. They said that I never even saw myself in that position, but they told me, they're like, I think you could be the brigade commander. And for me, I thought they were crazy at the time, but they were dead serious. They didn't stutter. And that just planted the seed for me. As I went through the rest of the year, I started to take on just leadership roles different initiatives and doing community service and kind of just cultivating my passions in the brigade and initiatives and taking on leadership within the club in different clubs. I'm also in the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And I realized that, I really did have, I had a passion for service. I had a passion for people and a passion for making an impact on any level, just in the best way that I can. So I threw my name in the hat. Just as going up for an opportunity to maximize my potential as best as possible. So it was there was some interest in just me growing and being the best version of myself that I could be. And I wanted to see if being the brigade commander, if that was something that I was cut out for. I just committed to pouring my heart into it.
Excellent. No, it's fascinating. You said, I didn't even think about it. And somebody said, hey, you'd make a good one. And that spark kind of lit in your mind. Did you have any idea when you put your hat in the ring and put yourself forward for it? So looking at the history of your institution, 175 years old, women have only been a part of the institution for the past 44 years. As I read in my research, that there's been 16 women who have been brigade commander, and now you're the first Black woman who's been brigade commander. Did you have any sense of what it would mean historically and the sort of attention that's come your way since being awarded this position?
So I knew it was going to be significant. Someone that was definitely something that many people told me going up for it, but I didn't know that I was going to get this much attention. And that was going into it. It was something that in some ways drew me away because I've definitely always been more of an introverted person. I never like too much attention. I don't like the spotlight on me. Talking in front of a large group of people, it's always something that I've had to build a lot of courage to do. So I knew that was something that I would see if I were to go forward with it and if I were to be selected. So I was always a little bit fearful in that sense. But, what I've come to embrace is that there may not be another opportunity where there's someone who looks like me who's in this role. And I take that and I think about this, the responsibility that I have in this position, not only to all those who came before me, all those who went through the Naval Academy and may not have even had a chance to come up, go up for a position due to the barriers, social barriers that they faced while they were here. But, what this means for all those who are looking up to me now, who are coming after me, looking up and seeing maybe the Naval Academy is something that is something that they can do too, or maybe even being brigade commander is something that they could pursue as well. So I'm very, very blessed that it has gotten as much as I've gotten the amount of attention that I've had in that it's creating opportunities for people. So that's the way that I view it.
Yeah, no, it's really inspirational. I mean, I've read some of the stories and heard some of your other interviews, and it's just incredible. You sound like just a remarkable young woman and a young leader. And I'd love to just learn a little bit more about where you came from, kind of the sparks of what makes you you. So if you think about, you know, you're forging your identity, as I read it, you know, you're pretty involved, right? You're an athlete, you're involved in choir, the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. It seems like faith plays a big part in you. Like if you say, here are the building blocks of Sydney, young leader, what do you think those building blocks are for you?
Yeah, my number one foundation is my faith, and that's been something that's carried me through high school, carried me through my early years at the academy, plebe year especially, and it definitely has brought me to this point. And so I'm heavily involved in the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. When I'm not being brigade commander, then I'm working. I'm also co-president of FCA, so having meetings with some of my own teammates, athletes from other teams, having Bible studies, and having our team, our weekly FCA huddles. So that's been something that has definitely just motivates me pretty each and every day, and something that carries me through. And in addition to that, it's just my family, my friends, all the people that I lean on heavily. I think that the most valuable part of my career here at the Naval Academy has just been the people, my teammates on the track team, my company mates, and just every single person that I've met along the way, my mentors, my coaches. So I'd say, just in short, my faith, my family, my friends, and just all the people that have made this whole journey worthwhile has really built my foundation.
Excellent. Yeah. So with your faith, for example, so is that something that's always been a part of your life? Is that come from family, or where does that pillar of faith, where does that start for you?
Yeah. So I grew up in a Christian household. And so my parents, I value the opportunities that they presented to me, and just making sure that my faith was a priority, that my family always relied heavily on our faith and going to church. When I was very young, starting in middle school, my mom, she signed me up for a mission trip to the inner city of Chicago. And so I remember I didn't want to go at the time. I didn't know many people at my church. I always had different priorities growing up, and I was very involved in sports. I loved to play soccer. I loved to just hang out with my friends, do well in school. I've got a lot of satisfaction in reaching high performance marks in those areas. But it wasn't until I kind of stepped out of my own mindset of individualism. And I went on that trip. I was 12 years old, and going to different homeless shelters and service, going to soup kitchens and community centers, and just really pouring into the people of who were in need, that I found that I had such a passion for service and such a passion for, putting my faith into action and being the hands and feet of a great work, and doing everything that I possibly can do to glorify God in everything that I do. And that's my motivation is even now as brigade commander and throughout my time at the academy, is to be the hands and feet of a great work, and to be a part of something that's bigger than my own individual pursuit or my own selfish ambition. Starting that time in middle school, from that trip and going on, I really found that the thing that really drives me, what is like the root of my passion, is just service and doing works to contribute to something that's greater in the world, and pouring my heart into that. So that's what motivated me to come to the academy, and that's what still motivates me today.
Yeah, and I read that you've done quite a bit of missionary work, right, through your church. Like, can you tell us about, like, when you think about both nationally, right, within the U.S. and then internationally as well, when you think about, you know, like, are there trips or instances or circumstances that really stand out in your mind as being kind of profoundly shaping in who you are?
Yes, definitely. So growing, I went to outside of that first initial trip to Chicago, I went also to Pontiac, Illinois. We went and we did some construction work. This was around eighth grade, and we spent a week working on just different houses, different projects for senior citizens. And then three years in a row, we went to Dayton, Ohio, and we went to an African refugee community there. And I remember those were some really profound memories that I had. And we would go back to the same community every single year and start to build relationships with just the members of that community and start to see the same faces every year. And some of the things we did was we built a basketball court from the ground up at a church. We would have a vacation Bible school camp that we would set up for the kids and talk to them there. And we built a community garden and we worked on, again, some construction work and just building homes for people who were coming in as refugees. And some of them didn't even know English. Some of them had just never experienced all the privileges that we had. So really, really profound memories in doing that. And then later on, I also went to the Dominican Republic, which was the first international trip that I went on. That one opened my eyes to a whole nother side of the world that I had never seen or experienced or even imagined. I grew up in a very nice neighborhood of America. Even though my family didn't always have the most money, we had everything that we needed. We never had to struggle. My parents always put food on the table. I always had a great education. And we kind of grew up in a sphere of privilege and affluence. Even if my family wasn't as affluent as those around me, I never feared for my life or had to worry about for many things. But going to the Dominican Republic for the first time and seeing people who lived in essentially metal sheds, people who, you know, had to live from one meal to the next. And it put into perspective that, you know, there's so much more to just a life of materialism. And there's so much out there that it just made me extremely grateful for everything that I had and want to do everything that I can to pour back into the world and to pour back into to people who are continuing to struggle in the situation, different situations that are different than what I'm facing myself. So that was in the Dominican Republic, and then going to India, which was the final trip that I went on before I came here to the academy. And then we went around, we went to different schools. We went and again, we would kind of minister to people, talk to go to different orphanages. And then that was largely a service trip as well. We also worked at clinics, went to the slums and gave them the necessary supplies that they needed to. So I loved humanitarian work. And as I went throughout high school, I had a dream that I wanted to be a missionary, or I wanted to do something. It was just a career in humanitarianism. But as I started to figure out exactly what would be the cross between, you know, all of my strengths and all of my passions, I knew that I loved to serve, and I loved that the satisfaction of giving back. But I wanted to, you know, still pursue my academic pursuits and still pursue my ambitions in sports. So the Naval Academy was just the perfect storm for me. It was the perfect place for me to land.
And I read in one of the interviews you did that you didn't always think that you didn't think like you were going to be ending up at the Naval Academy. You have a family history there, right? Is that correct?
Right. Yes. So my dad, he graduated from the academy in 1991. And because of that, much of my life, I wanted to pursue a different path. I wanted to do something else. So I thought I was going to go around and be a missionary or something like that. But it was the first time that I came to the Naval Academy that I just fell in love. I fell in love with the character of the people, the mission of the academy, the opportunities that I saw. I felt like I couldn't get anywhere else. I remember it was like, as a high schooler, this place felt like a dream to me. So I'm very blessed that I pursued this path, and I realized that all of the best things that about my dad, the things that I looked up to the most, his heart for service and his desire to use his gifts and everything that he has to pour back into others. I realized that those things were fostered from his time at the academy. And it's helped us, and it's made me a lot closer to him, to understand him a lot better, and just the reasons why he is the way that he is. And I see myself following the same path.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned it's really interesting to hear you say that you feel like you got your dad's heart for service, and you mentioned that family was one of those pillars, right? We talked a little bit about faith and family. Are there parts of you, when you think about the parts of you that are best suited to lead in the way that you are now, if you had to kind of pick like what you got from different important family members who influenced you, what would you say you drew from either family members or teachers or other sorts of folks who were mentors to you when you were young?
Yes. So when I was young, I'd say for sure, like I said, for my dad, I got a heart for service and a heart for loving every single person. I learned how to forgive. I learned how to see the best in everybody, no matter who they are, no matter what they've done. And that's something I don't think that I would have had the same perspective had he not raised me the way that he did, and that he raised my siblings and I. I'd say from my little brother, he's probably the biggest inspiration in my life. His name is Justin. And when he was born handicapped, so he was blind and deaf. And even before he was born, the doctors told my parents that he had between 2 days and 2 years to live. But after going through several surgeries and lots of prayers and lots of stressful nights, this past May he just turned 19, which was is a blessing to us. And he's someone that he reminds me, he's the emblem of hope for me. Even in difficult circumstances, seemingly impossible circumstances, things that don't make sense, things that seem like times when I feel like I'm in a dead end or where, just life isn't going my way. I think about him, and I think about him as a miracle that, you know, every day is worth living, and not a single day is guaranteed. So you have no choice but to make the most of it. And a lot of people ask, I mean, even with taking care of my brother, it's just how we do it as our family. How do we cope with dealing with a sibling who has special needs, and where, you know, his life is very fragile. And the only way to move us forward, and that's all into always having a hopeful attitude. So I learned that from him, and I learned that from the lessons that my family went through in raising him and just going through just all the struggles that came with that.
Okay. Oh, wow. So in kind of fast forwarding a little bit, so you have these pillars of family and faith that take you end up at the Naval Academy. You know that you want to serve. I'd love to talk a little bit more about the concept of service and what that means to you, right? Because kind of church-based, faith-based, humanitarian service and military service are very different concepts of service. So for you, what's the link? Or what when you think of service for yourself, what does that look like in its highest form for you?
Yeah, so service in its highest form is just being completely and utterly selfless in everything you do, realizing that, you know, you're the joy of your life, the purpose of your life is to impact others, is that your life is success is meaningless if it's only for yourself. You can pursue, I could come here and I can pursue a career at the Naval Academy and go and live a great career and go off and make lots of money, but at the end of the day, I'll have nothing to show for it. But that exactly that is just this money and my own selfish ambition. I think that the dent that you leave in the universe is the way that you impact others along the way. And that's what I strive to do. I push for my team is that what our job here is defined by the legacy that we leave. We touch the hearts and minds of the people that we serve. The way that we just give everything that we have in out of selfish service to others. So that the link between, you know, what we're doing and what I've done in the past with humanitarian work and just in my heart for faith and you know, my heart for service, it's all interconnected in just pouring more into the world than we're taking out.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. And I wanted to ask you too, you know, when you think about what the world looks like in serving others. So we are and have been for almost a year now in a state of the world, you know, we're in a pandemic, and just connecting with others is something that's become a lot more difficult in the past year, right? Just being around others. So I wanted to ask you, just especially in light of what's happening right now, what does that look like for you? What has the experience been at the Naval Academy at this time? Like, what does connection look like? What do classes look like? What does leadership look like in the middle of a pandemic?
Yeah, it's difficult. And yeah, that's what I motivate my team by saying that there's no other brigade staff. There's no other group of people who have been at the leadership of the Naval Academy who have faced what we're going through right now in leading through a pandemic, through virtual classes, through a complete operational pause where we don't even have sports running right now. We can't even leave our rooms because we're in a restriction of movement status where the only things that we can leave our rooms for are to go work out for 2 hours a day and to go pick up food. And that's just because of COVID and because of the situation that we're in. There's a lot of things that we were looking forward to. But the fact of the matter is every single one of us had goals when we came into this position and where we came into the semester. In taking on this leadership semester, we had my goal was to lead with my heart, to build foster a culture of appreciation within the brigade where we can look beyond the mask and into the eyes of every person that we lead and learn their story. Each one of us can share our own personal stories and take the time to be touched by the stories of those that we lead, and also just embrace our purpose as individuals and our purpose as a team, and keep striving towards the mission that we set out to do, not just this semester, but that the mission of the Naval Academy as a whole, and keep pursuing that and pursuing excellence in that. You know, as difficult as our current circumstances are, that I'd say that those goals still stand. I mean, there's still ways that we can connect, and there's still ways that we can embrace our purpose. There's still ways that we can foster a culture of appreciation, even behind a computer screen. And so we've had to get creative because there's a lot of things that we can't do in person, having a lot of virtual meetings. But you know, we have to keep pursuing each other in any ways that we can. Keep pursuing love, keep pursuing laughter, keep pursuing joy. And that's, even though we've had to do it virtually, it's still, our mission still stands.
More from our Reagan Forum with Sydney Barber after this message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now back to our Reagan Forum with Sydney Barber.
What are some of the kind of key pillars? How do you do that, right? So part of the responsibility of leadership is, you know, setting a vision for, you know, your team that's working with you as a leadership team for the, you know, 4,000 plus cadets who you serve. You know, one of the things we've seen during the pandemic across the country and across the world are, you know, issues of mental health, right? Humans are social creatures. How are you working to keep morale up. You mentioned some of it, but like, what are some of the activities? What does it look like if I was somebody who was in your command? How would you help inspire me and keep my morale up?
So some of the things that we've gotten going on, or we've had going on, is so we have a every night there's a leadership, a series of leadership briefs that we'll have, and so we'll get for probably like 4 or 5 hours. Every single hour there will be a new professor or military officer or someone new that will just come on a Google Meet for an hour and kind of share their life experiences, their experiences during their time in the fleet, some of their philosophies on leadership. And it's just a Q&A time. So, and sometimes there'll be up to 1,000 people on the call, it'll be live streamed so people, anyone can listen in. And that's just an opportunity for people to still develop while they're here and still engage with each other and also continuing to grow even when they're only in their room. But outside of that, some of our company commanders have gotten pretty creative. I've seen there's been like a virtual spelling bee. Someone had a virtual concert where people have been able to sing and show their skills, virtual talent shows. We've had a lot of virtual Jeopardy on the company level, also in the battalion level. I know there was a virtual trivia night, and we're working on a lot of different things. We're not going on spring break this semester, so we're staying here all the way up until graduation. So something that my staff is working on is Spring Fest, which is like spring break at home. And working through a lot of different events on that, maybe a silent disco in our common area, just like more events like that, and trying to make the most of the situation. Most people, they understand the circumstances that we're in. They don't question that we're in the circumstance because COVID is a real threat, and there's only so much what we have to do. This is what we have to do in order to overcome the circumstances. But people are trying to do all that they can to keep morale up.
Yeah, excellent. So, when you think about when you were selected for the role, and obviously you kind of knew the context in which you were stepping into this role, how do you create the vision that you have for leading? Both, you know, at the institution and during a pandemic, like what's your vision for what your leadership will look like during your time as brigade commander?
Yeah. So, what I thought about when I thought about, you know, what my vision was, what my intent was, I had to think about what motivates me and what are the best things that I've seen from leaders that I've been led by, and what are the things that really are truest to my own character. Because I can't, there's been plenty of leaders who have come before me that have done this role of brigade commander in a number of different ways and have different philosophies on the best way to go about it. But in a situation like this where this is not a typical semester. And so I don't see myself as a typical brigade commander, in that, you know, my priorities right now is my kind of tenets for the brigade, the things that I set as our focus areas, is number one, like I said, to lead with your heart and to lead with passion and pursuing the people that we lead and engaging and looking at the person first. Because like you mentioned, is mental health is such a huge challenge right now, given the fact that some people are in their rooms 22 hours a day. So what we need are leaders that care, leaders that value their people, leaders that foster appreciation for those that they lead and can kind of build a culture of appreciation for one another. So that's something that I've been pushing is on every single level, is getting to know the heart of the people that we lead and being intentional in everything that we do and deliberate in how we pursue one another. And so that's been one of our primary focuses. And we've been doing that through small unit discussions. So when we pass down word, even when we pass down bad news, we try to do it in a way that it's not just an email, it's not just a policy that comes down, but it's more of a conversation down at our squad leader level. So the squads are 10 to 11 individuals. And that's our smallest unit in the brigade. So trying to empower the squad leader the most has been a priority for us. And then the second thing has been embracing our purpose and embracing the reasons why we're here. Because a lot of times a question that comes up is for so many people is, you know, why are we here? Why are we here when we're in the middle of a pandemic? Why does it matter that we're still here, even if we're doing virtual class from our room? Or why does it matter that we have all 4,000 people in person, you know, continuing to come here at the academy and doing the things that we set out to do when we could be at our rooms? Wouldn't it be safer to be there? And what's been most important for us is instilling that purpose and realizing that we're a part of something that is so much greater than the circumstance that we're in, that the, you know, America of tomorrow is the America that we're going to inherit once we graduate. Like for my class, it's going to be in a couple of months. We're going to be officers. We're going to be leaders of this country. The America that we inherit is going to need us to be ready, and we can't be ready from spread out all across the country. We need to stay focused in this time, and we're not here. We're here for a mission, and we're here for something that is so important, so critical into this moment in history. So the three things that I've been pushing is again, like leading with your heart, embracing our purpose, and then finally leaving a legacy that we can all be proud of, and understanding that we're all part of a much greater moment in history.
Yeah, I want to circle back and kind of build on what you just talked about. You know, this idea that one, connecting the idea of service, which you've talked about, and service to God and service to your faith. And now in the military, there's the further connection of service to America, right? It's a different kind of faith, a faith in American ideals, a faith in what America stands for, both here in the country, but also internationally. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that as you look forward past graduation, when you enter the armed services and you're literally, you know, potentially putting your life on the line for the ideas of this country. What is it about that appeals to you as a form of service?
Well, it ties back to my faith. When I think about that, there's no greater sacrifice that can be made. There's no greater expression of love than someone who can lay their life down, that's willing to lay their life down for their friends, for their peers, for their comrades, for their country. And everything that we do is an act of love, essentially, and that's what I'm motivated by. That's what I'm motivated by. My faith is love, and that's what I'm motivated by in leadership, is that out of love you make sacrifices. Out of love you do what's best for those that you love and that you serve. And love is proven by action. And so you can say that you want to serve. You can say that you want to make an impact. And you can say that you want to be part of something that's greater than yourself. I mean, every single person on this earth wants to feel like their life has value and purpose, and that they're making an impact. But that those words mean nothing unless they manifest themselves into action. And so in pursuing this path is that using the love that I have in my heart and employing that into action for not only the generation of America that we're in right now, but especially for the generations that of America that are coming down the line 10, 20, or even 30 years from now.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, I want to ask you a little bit more about kind of connecting that to leadership, right? And I think a lot of times when people associate leadership in the military, they think, you know, chain of command, you know, very much like, okay, well, you get this, and you don't question your orders, right? You go out there and you have a duty and a mission to accomplish. And you've talked a lot about things that folks don't necessarily associate with military kind of leadership, with empathy, you know, empowering those below you. So how, you know, I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you bring those two elements of leadership together in your role.
Yes. I mean, at the end of the day, your chain of command, the most successful mission, the most successful thing that you can do, or the best thing that you can do as a leader, and me being in this billet, I'm my job is to build a team, to empower a team to accomplish a mission. And you do that through fostering a culture of trust. Your team has to trust you. You have to be able to have a mutual respect for the people that you lead and you serve, and they have to have a respect for you and be able to trust that you're leading them towards the right thing, and that you care about them, that you value them, that they feel like their voice is heard, that they feel like they are, that, you know, they are someone is critical to the mission. You have to be able to foster, you have to really be able to touch the hearts of the people that you lead. And that's what a lot of military leaders will discuss, is that you know, the most significant battle, this is what James Mattis said, General Mattis, is that the most profound and significant battle that you'll ever face is winning the hearts of those that you lead. And pursuing the battle of earning their trust, because that's what wins wars is the team. It's not about the individual. It's about the team accomplishing a mission. So I think that the best thing that I can do in this job, in this billet, in this role right now, especially in a pandemic, is build an airtight team that's full of purpose and that's full of passion and it's driven towards a goal that we set out to do.
You mentioned General Mattis, a legendary Marine Corps leader and general, and brings me to my next question, which is, what comes next for you? So I've read your goal for what comes next actually has very much to do with the Marine Corps. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yes. So I'll be Marine Ground. I'll be commissioning as a Marine Ground officer in May.
Excellent. So in your choice of this, so I'm just, as I read about all the things you do, right? So in addition to being the brigade commander and you're aiming for a career in the Marine Corps, you are majoring in mechanical engineering. Is that correct?
Yes.
And which is, so talk a little bit about how do you manage kind of leadership? And then I would imagine that's a pretty intense academic course load.
Yes, no, this is it's definitely an intense semester for me. And even casting back to when I thought about, when I contemplated going up for this position, because I'm motivated by my heart in many ways. I'm also motivated by reason and logic in other ways too. So I was thinking about, you know, is it logical for me to go up for such a demanding billet right now? Because like I said, my commitment is to pour everything that I possibly have to the brigade and to the people that I leave. So I had to ask myself, is that I have left some anything left in the tank? Like, could I truly give all of myself and be the leader that our people needed during this time, given all that I had on my course load? But you know, I think that when you love everything that you do, then it doesn't feel like a burden. So if I love the people that I serve, if I'm passionate about what I'm learning, if I love my team and I love to go to practice every day, and I love to go to FCA every day, then it doesn't feel like I have a burden. It just feels like I'm just pursuing all the things that I love, and just in a numerous different ways. And I'm trying and use everything, every single endeavor as a growth opportunity. So I'd say during right now, school is definitely something that's it's a challenge, and it makes it difficult to stay on top of all of my work. And sometimes, you know, the people take the priority, and school sometimes will come down lower and on the table of priorities or even track sometimes, and things will fluctuate throughout the semester. But it's just kind of knowing myself well enough to know what I can handle and being able to diligently manage that throughout the semester.
Yeah, you mentioned track. So are you able to compete in track? I read somewhere that you had set a school record, right? You're part of the school record 4x4 relay team.
Yes. So actually, a couple of weeks ago, I was up at West Point, and we competed in our final star meet. So it's our Army Navy indoor track meet. So I've still been going to practice, still been doing workouts and competing with the team every day. And then that was another thing that before I went out for this billet, I thought about. I was like, am I still going to be able to be as involved and be a varsity athlete and brigade commander and all these other things? But you know, my team has made me into the person that I am, and my pursuit in doing track, while I've always had a busy schedule, I've always just been someone with a high motor and trying to do being involved in a lot of different activities. While and track has been one of those things that has shaped the person I am. So, you know, I think about, yes, there's a lot that I have on my plate right now, but I'm only going to keep continuing what I did to get me here and carry it on for the rest of the semester.
Excellent. So wait, just to get this right. So you're a varsity track and field athlete at a super high level. You're involved in gospel, you're a gospel choir. You are taking a course load for mechanical engineering, which is tough. You're the brigade commander. And I read somewhere you're still kind of volunteering and mentoring young students as well. Is that true?
Yes. So some of the things I've had to kind of put on the back burner. So this semester, gospel choir hasn't been having you know, different events, and because we've been on the yard. So it hasn't been as crazy in some areas, but I've still been doing track. 17 credits for mechanical engineering. Tuesday nights and throughout the week, we'll have meetings for Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And then something that I was even more involved in last semester that we laid the foundation for was something called Midshipman Diversity Team, which is, you know, a group of midshipmen pursuing different diversity and inclusion initiatives at the Naval Academy and doing outreach. So I've also been involved with those pursuits as I've been brigade commander. But, you know, again, all of those things, they just make me the person that I am. So it doesn't really feel like it's too much of a burden for me.
Excellent. Well, you mentioned too at the outset that you're a little bit of an introvert, right? That you're not somebody who necessarily craves the public spotlight. So my next question for you is, you know, you think about leadership and the burden of leadership and being involved in all these activities. What sorts of things do you do for yourself to kind of recharge your own battery? Because obviously if your battery is low, you're not going to be able to lead very well. So what sorts of activities do you do to kind of keep yourself fully charged?
Yes, you know, that's a great question. And so I do a lot of reading and reflecting. So I try to wake up every day and journal and just reflect on think about each one of the endeavors that I have throughout the day. Think about kind of game plan, how I'm going to attack each one, whether that's just a class in the morning, to a meeting with the commandant, to practice, how I'm going to attack the workout, how I'm going to get through, you know, various meetings, a meeting with my staff. I just kind of, you know, walk through my day when I first wake up each and every moment and just, you know, kind of think about, you know, what I'm going to have to do, what my objectives are going to have to be for each one of those things. And, you know, and try to emulate how I'm going to feel in each moment just to prepare myself. And then, you know, on the weekends, what I'll do is on Sunday mornings, that's when I'll just turn my phone off completely, or do not disturb. And I'll just spend some time watching church or just again reflecting and spending time with myself. And then during the week, I'll try to get some time away to do constant reflection and constant reading right before I go to bed at night as well.
Okay, what are you reading? If you had to say, here's something that's influencing my thinking about leadership or life or anything like that, what are you working on reading right now?
So right now I'm reading with a couple other people, Legacy by James Kerr. It's a book on leadership. It's about the All Blacks rugby team. So that's been something it was given to me by a friend. It was actually given to me by the brigade commander before me, my predecessor. And so that's been something that has been particularly influential to me.
And what stands out from that book? I studied abroad in Australia, so I was a big fan of the New Zealand All Blacks when I was kind of down watching rugby. But what leadership lessons have you pulled from rugby?
Yes. So, I mean, the title of the book is Legacy, that everything that we do as a team is contributing to a legacy that was established before we got here. And that's like my entire mantra, is that we are contributing to a legacy. You want to leave, our role here is to leave a dent on the universe, leave our imprint, make our name known in this moment in history, that we're a part of something that's so much greater, that started long before we got here, and it's not going to finish to completion. until long after we're gone. And it's defined, the legacy that we're leaving is defined by our ethos and our values and the character of who we are. And we have to, our role is to maintain, stay true to those values and establish them and really emphasize them and be able to leave the job, the state that we're in right now. So for us as leaders in this moment during this pandemic, leave this billet better than it was when we got here. That's a lesson that they talk about, that James Kerr talks about in the book, is to leaving this place better than it was when we got here. And how are we going to do that? How are we going to continue contributing to this lineage of kind of the brotherhood that we have established together? But there's a lot of ways that you can do that. But again, it comes down to, you know, fostering you know, a team, a culture of trust, and building a team based off of you know, shared values and shared sacrifice together. So as difficult as the circumstances that we're in has been for so many people, it's also the perfect breeding ground for us to come, you know, bind together and get in the trenches and just realize that the shared sacrifice is unlike any experience that we'll ever have anytime until we get into the fleet.
So you're talking about this idea of legacy. You're reading a book on legacy. And so what I'd love to do, my senior year in college, I took a class called Theories of the Good Life. And the whole point of our course was to look forward into our life, think about how we wanted our life to roll out from the point of departure, right? Your senior year, it's you're stepping out into the real world, as it were. So if you fast forward yourself 20 years and you look back at what's happened between today, when you are kind of this trailblazing leader, and 20 years down the road, what do you want to be able to say about the life you lived, about the type of leadership and the type of roles and the type of impact you've had as you look forward to these next couple of decades?
Wow, that's a pretty, you know, profound question I had to think about for a second. But, you know, when I think about the life that I live again, I want to be able to say that, I want to be able to confidently say that I poured everything that I emptied the tank, that I gave everything that I could to whatever, to my passion. And I didn't do anything for anyone else, but I pursued the thing that really lights a fire in my heart. And I spread that fire in a monumental way. And so whether that's here at the Naval Academy, with something that I'm passionate about, something that I was passionate about was, you know, the issues of diversity and inclusion. And then how can I light that fire, that passion that I've had to make it something that impacts a large number of people. And so that's when we formed the Midshipman Diversity Team. And I think about, you know, what I want out of my career in the Marine Corps is that like I said, you know, leading with heart is something that sometimes can be unconventional, and leading with and kind of looking more into the heart of the person and leading with empathy and fostering trust by you know, sharing your story with someone and embracing someone else's story and learning who they are and you know, kind of cultivating the passions and emotions of the people that you lead and having a true and genuine pulse on who they are. I would love for that to be you know, the leader that I am and that I can say that I was throughout my career and that's what I hope to that's the legacy that I hope to lead throughout my, when I'm done here and when I look back on all that I've done.
Okay, and I'll wrap up. We just have a couple minutes left here, and I want to be respectful of your time, and I'm just so incredibly grateful for you, your willingness to share your story and your philosophy of leadership with us. My final kind of outro set of questions has to do with the young women who now look to you as a role model, right? So your story has been widely shared. Millions and millions of people have heard your story and have been inspired by it. So for the young women across the country who look to you and potentially see something now in themselves that they didn't see before because of your example, what words of advice would you have to them?
Number one is before you do anything else, before you think about who you want to be, before you even look to me, I think the person that you need to know most, the number one person you need to know, is the one in the mirror. Know yourself better than you know anybody else. And then from there, cultivate your passions and identify the things that, keep you up at night, the things that that get you up in the morning. That's what your passion is. And then from there, define your purpose. And you define your purpose by, intersecting the things that you're passionate about, but with the natural gifts that you have, things that the God-given gifts that you have, whether that's in school, whether that's in sports, whether that's in your the way that you communicate with people, or the way that you can touch people in whatever way is unique to you. Identify how those gifts that you have can intersect with your passions to pursue the purpose that's specific to you. And then from there, don't pursue a billet, don't pursue necessarily a person, pursue your purpose in your life. But that starts with knowing yourself and knowing your passions.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Know your purpose, pursue your passions, use those natural gifts. Fantastic and amazing advice from a remarkable young leader. Sydney, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today, to share everything that you've shared. I can't wait to see what comes next for you. I know it's going to be great. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. This was great. And I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me as well. So this has been an honor, and I look forward to everything coming in the future. Hopefully we can talk again sometime.
Absolutely. All right. Well, it's been wonderful, and good luck to you.
Speaking in 1985 at commencement exercises for the U.S. Naval Academy, President Reagan said, "Let me leave you with these thoughts. Your countrymen have faith in you and expect you to make decisions. The issues will not be black and white. Otherwise, there'd be no decision to make. Do not be afraid to admit and consider your doubts, but don't be paralyzed by them. Be brave. Make your judgment and then move forward with confidence, knowing that although there's never 100% certainty, you've honestly chosen what you believe to be, as you've been told by the Admiral, the right course. Do this and the American people will always back you up." What perfect advice for Midshipman Barber. To find a listing of all upcoming events, please visit reaganfoundation.org/events. Thank you for listening.
For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit reaganfoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Until next week, thanks for listening, and God bless you.
Don't forget to subscribe to A Reagan Forum podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of A Reagan Forum come out every Thursday. Like what you hear? Check out our Words to Live By podcast, featuring radio addresses and speeches Ronald Reagan delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. New episodes drop every Tuesday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.